Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, Andy Dunn is in studio. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for popping in. So we have a Heineken Champions Cup weekend to preview and look forward to. On Saturday, 1 o'clock, Ulster are away to Claremont. They have Bath to come in Belfast in round six, and you would presume they will qualify for the knockout stages, Ulster, but this Saturday is a chance to secure a home quarter-final. So that's at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Connacht against Toulouse at the Sports Ground at 3:15. That is live on Off the Ball this weekend. On Sunday, we have Leinster already qualified after four rounds, ridiculously enough. They are at home to Lyon. That's at the RDS. 1 o'clock, live and Off the Ball as well on the Sunday. And then Racing against Munster in La Défense in Paris at 3:15. Munster are in must-win territory. That is where we are ahead of round five of the Heineken Champions Cup. Are you enjoying your rugby at the moment?
No, not particularly.
Okay, good.
I think I have a World Cup hangover still. I've enjoyed very, very, very little of it in terms of as a spectacle, and I think that is not because what's on the fare that's on show is particularly turgid. It is at times. Some of the Munster games have been, I think, in particular their performances. But I just think maybe. Maybe it's like a breakup. We needed to part for a couple of months and hopefully get a bit of a kick now coming into the business end of the Heineken knockouts, or group stages, and then the Six Nations build up. So
after watching a gazillion games in the World Cup, you needed a break, frankly.
Yeah, I think so.
That's fair enough.
I think that's fair.
Most sports it comes.
Didn't
at the
you?
Well, to a point, yeah. At the end of most sports, it comes at the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, it's a long old haul, I think. The last, and can you imagine, it's quite rich coming from us guys sitting on a couch in a studio. I can only imagine how some of the players must feel, having gone through the emotional turmoil of the last 12 months, you know.
The Leinster players, if we're talking broadly for a moment, and the Ulster players to a point, although clearly they don't have as many Irish internationals, don't seem to be suffering any kind of hangover.
No. I think that one of the things I was taken aback by was the first couple of games Sexton was involved in when he came back from the World Cup. He was electric. He was so good. I mean, it's as good as I've seen him in a Leinster or Ireland shirt for a couple of years. He was really, really flying. So whether he felt he just had a point to prove again. So it's interesting how different players respond to trauma, emotional trauma. I mean, Johnny was excellent. You look at Jack Carty, who's suddenly seems like a fall guy from the World Cup, and probably not deservedly so. He set up two tries in the Japan game. Mm-hmm. There were other guys in the field, far more experienced senior players, who didn't grab the bull by the horns and say, right, how are we going to tactically shift this challenge that Japan are giving us. There was Conor Murray inside him. There was, I think, Rory Best, Peter O'Mahony on the field. He wasn't alone, but Jack seems to have gone the opposite way since the World Cup. So, yeah, it's been an interesting period watching that fallout and how players have responded in terms of their performance levels and their enthusiasm levels and so on.
A player who would have come home from the World Cup, you suspect, very eager to get game time and to get moving with his career, was Joey Carberry.
Yeah.
He has started four matches since January last year.
Yeah.
In a year, four starts. And now it's been confirmed today. Johan van Graan did a press conference in Limerick this afternoon ahead of the weekend game in Paris. He'll be out for 3 to 4 months anyway with his wrist ligament injury. He'll have surgery. He will miss the entire Six Nations. And effectively for Carberry, that feels like another season gone.
Yeah, it's pretty grim for him. I can only feel sorry for him. He can't quite catch a break. I think van Graan was very angry that he went to the World Cup, and he felt it wasn't from a player welfare point of view. I don't think he felt it was appropriate, so he was patched up, and it's very, very tricky situation, I think, because I'm sure as a player he was probably willing to say, patch me up when I go to a World Cup. You don't want to miss a World Cup. He's not thinking of welfare. He's thinking, I can get it right. I can, you know, I'm going to carry it through. If he pulls out of a World Cup, people might say, could you not just get on with it? It's a World Cup. So very, very difficult. And then he is behind the eight ball a bit then, out of match fitness, out of his own, I suppose, from a physical point of view. I'm sure there are question marks in his mind just getting back into full level rugby again. And then he goes and does this. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a pretty tough period for him.
From Andy Farrell's perspective now, he's certainly sweating on Johnny Sexton even more so. Mm. And the word seems to be relatively positive on Sexton. I mean, he's not going to play before the Six Nations, but they do seem relatively confident he'll be able to take the pitch against Scotland. Now, once again, we're asking 34-year-old Sexton to hit the ground running after an absence.
Yeah, yeah.
We almost need to stop doing this. This pattern we have with Johnny Sexton needs to stop, but that's where we are. Who's next man in at the moment? Jack Cardy, obviously, is fighting for his form. Conor Fitzgerald has picked up an injury, so Cardy will get two European games at 10, you would presume. And then suddenly, I mean, the same applies to John Cooney.
Yeah.
Ross Byrne, who 6-7 months ago was really wondering where he stood.
Yeah.
He's now the main man. Is he in pole position to step in if Sexton doesn't make it?
Yeah, I think so. In the same way I think Jack Carty has probably been unfairly viewed since the Japan fallout. I think Ross Byrne got a real raw deal because he played in that tragic game over in Twickenham where we were battered. Very, very difficult for a young guy coming into a group setup like he did, and got very, very little protection from his pack up front that day. They were well and truly overwhelmed. Now he could have done one or two things a little better, but it's a tricky environment, and I think you can get tired with a brush then all of a sudden that, you know, oh no, he's way off the pace. I think he's very, very comfortable at this pace.
International pace.
Yes, I do. I think he's very understated as a player, and it's always been a strength for him.
Yeah, the strength for him, okay, because I mean, the kicking from hand in particular catches the eye.
Yeah.
And he's exceptional at that.
Yeah.
Maybe the best in the country.
Yeah.
So leaving that aside for a moment, and obviously his place kicking is very solid and dependable. In general play, what does Ross Byrne bring to Ireland?
Well, in the same way, I think the best referees, you don't hear them as much and everyone just enjoys the game. I don't know what his winning ratio is as an out half, but it's pretty damn high.
I tend to notice the best players in most sports, though.
Well, I think I would disagree. I think you can... A mistake I made as a young out half was I felt the game needed to revolve around me.
Ego, though.
That was my ego, correct. I just want the world to revolve around me now, which is a bit easier. But I think Ross has such a grasp of how to use everyone else around him to maximise their strengths. So he can do. He can alter his depth when he receives the ball very well. If they're going wide, he'll drop back deeper. He has a very good capacity to pass wide off both hands, you know, while also engaging the defenders in front of him. So that holds interior defences. He can take it to the line as a threat himself. And he can, as you said, kick out of his hand really, really immeasurably well. Mm. That gives him variation in his game. It gives him the capacity to involve lots of different players at different times, which probably means all the guys around him are aware that Ross is going to give me a chance, Ross is going to give me the ball. But very few eyes are actually focused on Ross at that point. And I think that's when you're surrounded by quality, which he is at Leinster and at international level, I think that understatement and that capacity to underplay his hand is actually a huge strength for him. And I get what you're saying. If I was talking about Peter O'Mahony, I've given out before and said people say he does the unseen work. I was like, no, I want Peter O'Mahony to do more work. I know what unseen work is. That means he's not doing a whole lot of work in my mind. But in Ross Byrne's case, or an out half's case, any out half who glides through a game with the team seems to be revving and functioning nicely, that's a big positive.
Okay, that doesn't just happen.
No, absolutely not.
Tyler Blindell's injured, now Joey Carby's injured. JJ Hanrahan, Van Gran was talking today. He put his chances of playing at 50-50.
Yeah.
Tweaked a hamstring against Leinster on the 28th of December.
Yeah.
He will have to play in an artificial pitch here. Mm. Fast game against Racing. And Van Gran said, we just trained out there. This is him talking today. He did a bit of team training. True test will be on Friday. We'll test him on Friday. If he comes through, he'll play on the weekend. I won't risk him if the medical team say he's not 100%. So right from the off, they're a team who are training without their out half and going through moves without their out half. So that's a bad week's preparation. Their options, should Hanrahan be deemed not fit enough, are Ben Healy, 20 years of age, played in November against Edinburgh, has never played in Europe before, or increasingly it seems Rory Scannell.
Yeah, I think, firstly, I can't see JJ being given the go ahead from the medical team, just because of the time frames, late December and mid-January. If he tweaked his hamstring, even mildly, like a grade one tweak of a hamstring with my physio hat on, is still 3 to 4 weeks, you know. He could jog in a straight line and he can accelerate a bit and slow down, but play a crucial knockout European game in terms of acceleration and deceleration and sudden bursts of speed that he'll need to make, that's where your hamstring doesn't hold up. So I can't see it. I just can't see the medical team saying, go on out and give it a try. Mm. Because if it goes after 10 minutes, they've lost a player, obviously. In terms of the options then, if it was a game to really just, you know, go over and there's no chance of qualification, you know, maybe go with
Ben Healy.
Yeah. But I think in this case I would go with Scannell, even though it's not his position. Scannell's one of these, he's a bit different. He's a 12 who's, in John Giles' terminology, he's a footballing 12. He's not a crash bang wallop merchant. He's a really kind of cultured left boot.
Yeah.
He has that kind of nuanced kind of game management. He's definitely a cerebral rugby player as opposed to a battering ram, and he's a lot of experience. And so I think we've a tendency in Ireland to think out halves only play out half and should only play out half, and centres can't play there. In Australia and New Zealand and France, nines play there, tens play there, 12s play there, and it's a bit more interchangeable. So I would plump for Scannell, based on his footballing ability and experience.
And something I want to ask you, Munster obviously have enough in their plate without this problem. 2 wins from 7, Racing at home. I mean, everything about this just screams trouble. But is there a way they can go about their business at the weekend which takes the pressure off Scannell? Or is there just no way of cozying a number 10 through a game?
I think one of the things they've... I would actually think they need to put pressure on Scannell, actually, in the sense, if they do what they keep doing, which is, for example, like they were excellent, their front five were excellent over in Saracens, excellent. And that's including, you know, O'Mahony's injury immediately in the warm-up and Tadhg Byrne's broken ankle. The front five for the first 60 minutes were excellent. JJ Hanrahan kicked the ball out of hand once in about 65 minutes. Conor Murray box kicked everything else. Conor Murray box kicked very well. But it's it's too much same, same, same. I mean, JJ Hanrahan ought to have kicked the ball a lot more in that Saracens game. It would have given them, I think, what was a more traditional Munster style. He had Scannell as a left footer outside him. He had multiple options to kick into the backfield, but Saracens never got challenged there, which, after a period of time, you don't challenge their backfield, your game becomes too predictable, and physical toil and sweat and emotion goes 65 minutes against a good side. Well, I think Scannell needs to command ball from... He's not an out-and-out 10, but he's a smart guy who has a lot of game management experience. Why can't he ask for more ball from Murray, take pressure off Murray, and say, I'm going to use my left foot in a way that adds variation to the Munster game. I think it would be a mistake to go in and try and protect a guy like Scan. He doesn't need it.
2 wins from 7 is obviously grim. Now, some of these are against very good teams and not by huge scorelines, but even the Leinster defeat in Thomond Park, followed by the lack of a response, to say the least, in Belfast. And that was an ignominious evening for Munster. It was embarrassing, really. Bullied was the word Alan Quinlan used. And then, as has been the case for too long now, they struggled to score themselves. So they don't seem to be in a very good place, to say the least. Teams can look worse than they are, and you suspect Munster are in that kind of a period at the moment. it remains to be seen what they can muster up this week, a European week, the heritage of putting bad weeks behind them, you know, runs through the province for a long time.
It does. But
it's not good at the moment. Like, they're really off.
They are, yeah. I think they're at a pretty low ebb. Even though you've got a bad cold, Joe, you're still so eloquent. The way you described how they can kind of prime themselves for a week like this, I think that's still in their locker.
Do you? I don't anymore.
I do. I think that's still in the locker because, well, I was over covering Sarries. They were really, I thought they were excellent for 65 minutes. John Klein and Billy Holland were outstanding in that match, up against a pretty physical Saracens pack. They still have the nuts and bolts throughout the team, but the performance levels.
Can I tell you what makes me question that? To a point, yes, they were better in those games, but we are seeing incredibly un-Munster-like things happening. And I'm talking about Hanrahan's very unfortunate miss with the drop goal.
Yes.
That kind of crunch moment when it has to be nailed and it's nailed didn't happen. And then not taking the kick against Saracens to get the losing bonus point. Mm. It was like it was their first time playing in a tournament.
Mm.
These kind of things are creeping in. That's very worrying.
Yeah, I think this has gone on for a couple of seasons, certainly in my mind. Is they're having a bit of a crisis of identity in terms of what is their best way to play rugby.
Yes.
Because the best way they played rugby was a strong pack and Raj for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
And that's and that, never got injured.
No, and that shaped them in the professional era.
It shaped them in the professional era. They weren't necessarily renowned for that when Tony Ward was playing 10 back in the 70s and 80s because he was very unpredictable. And, you know, famous quote was the centres, Tony Ward introducing himself to his outside centre on a plane because they had no idea who he was or what he was going to do with the ball. So Munster had a very unpredictable history, then a very predictable history under Raj.
You think back to 2008, maybe when they were really at their peak. Some of the rugby they played was absolutely fantastic then as well.
Yeah.
And brilliant running rugby from their own, deep in their own half. You've Doug Howlett in there. So, I mean, they got a beautiful balance at their best.
They did.
But what is it now?
Well, I don't know, because I think when Rod Penny came in, he tried to give them a new departure in how they play, but he wasn't given time to do that. And I think the Home and Park crowd weren't patient about it. I don't know how many of the senior players were patient with it. Who knows what would have happened had he got a couple more seasons, but I do think they've got two people who can shape a style for sure in Rowntree and Larkham.
Mm.
Larkham arguably top two or three out halves of all time. And although he was known for a passing game, you know, he banged over drop goals to win World Cup semi-finals. He had a good kick out of hand. Mm. He is certainly, I would have thought, flexible in terms of how they could play. And you mentioned 2008. They would squeeze teams and they would exert pressure through territory, as Raj did, as their front five did, and brilliant back row and stringers. Delivery and speed away from the ruck, and all of those things are cumulative in terms of their performance, but they had the ability to play a very good running game. But I think it was built on a solid foundation of we know what our best strengths are, and currently they don't seem to have a clue what their best strengths are, other than the occasional match that they're able to be really up for it, and in that case it seems that's not that sustainable.
They will be up for it on Sunday.
They will.
Do you give them
I do actually give them a chance, yeah, I do.
How big a chance, I guess, is the question. They always have a chance. I mean,
I remember you asked me before the World Cup, what was Ireland's chance of qualifying for the quarters? And I said 2 or 20%, 2 out of 10. So I'll stick with the numbers. I would give them a 6 out of 10 chance.
That means they're favourites. That puts them as more likely than not.
Sorry, okay, 4 out of 10 then is what I mean, the opposite. Okay. 60-40 in favour of Racing.
Well, make the case. I mean, on the artificial pitch against Racing, how are Munster going to trouble them?
Rory Scannell taking some responsibility to use his left boot to find space. The ball landing in space, variation of kicks, chip kicks, grubber kicks, wiper kicks, not just box kicks, because that's predictable and teams know how to defend that quite well. Other than that, a very, very aggressive physical defensive performance, a repeat from the front five that happened for 65 minutes in Sarri's, with maybe with a capacity to push on that extra 5-10 minutes fueled by emotion and disappointment of the last couple of weeks. But in terms of just cold tactical brilliance, I can't pick out one or two areas. I can see them making fundamental changes. I think the Scannell thing could turn out to be a positive.
Okay. That's on Sunday at 3:15. We're talking here with Andy Dunn. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. The other big game at the weekend, I mean, Leinster obviously are through already, and you would fully suspect they'll take care of Lyon at the RDS. Ulster go to Clermont. They're 1 point clear of Clermont. They're one of four teams. Ulster have won all their games thus far. They took care of Munster with ease and a certain kind of flourish as well. It was like a night of celebration. It confirmed everything they'd been hoping all season, really, the fans up there, you know, and they put a combined 73 points on Connacht and Munster over Christmas. Kudzia, Jordy Murphy, John Cooney, all given a clean bell of health for the weekend. There's a few things. Darren Cave was on with us recently, and he was saying, like, guys like Kudzia have given them a ball-carrying dimension, which maybe they've lacked a little bit in previous years, and they've got people who can get over the gain line. So there's that, certainly, which has improved. And then there seems to be just a consistency of selection. You see a lot of familiar names, like, you know, the same key components are driving the performances. Dan McFarlane seems to have done a brilliant job. Cave would say he's a real detail-orientated coach in the mould of Schmidt, which Irish players do seem to like, despite all the recent evidence to the contrary. And Stuart McCluskey, I wanted to ask you about. He was man of the match in Belfast. Even I looked at a video of Ulster's tries last year, which is a montage recently, like in a couple of minutes, all their tries. And McCluskey invariably was at the decisive end of so many of them. It's often only when you see it all together you notice the pattern more so.
Yeah.
Really, like, given the final pass or the key pass, the Irish midfield is a fairly crowded space, obviously. Yeah. Is McCluskey good enough to force his way in there, or is he just below that tier?
I think he's good enough to force his way in, yeah. He's been given a light. If you got a bloopers reel from Ulster last year, McCluskey would feature in a number of them, because he's been given a license to try and offload. So he, a number of times when he did try and pass out of the tackle, it didn't work. But what happened is the frequency of mistakes started to diminish. And after a period of time, players, support runners, became accustomed to the fact that Stewart's got license.
Yeah.
Stewart's got physicality, and he's got footwork, and he's got balls, and he's got, you know, irreverence, and he's going to actually give things a go. He's going to do, he did a little grubber kick 1 week that you just never expect from a guy of his size. So he's got a lot going for him that Dan McFarlane needs huge, I think, praise for, because Dan has happened to come in there as a guy who's never been a head coach. He is kind of demonstrative, he is detail driven. And he's also formerly a prop. I was coached by Dan in my last couple of seasons in Connacht. He was the scrum coach. So I don't know if he particularly liked me as a flash Harry old stager.
Yeah.
And but he does seem to like, I think, the Scottish experience, the Gregor Townsend exposure. He does like flash rugby. Like, they play flash rugby. But I think where Darren Cave has talked about the Kutsis of the world, that they've added a bit of heavy metal to it. They've added guys who can carry hard. And when you get that balance of a really strong set piece, like some Marty Moore, who's, again, a bit of an unsung hero on that team.
Yeah.
Treadwell, a bit of an unsung hero. They've got the razzmatazz names. Cooney is on fire. They've a creative guy in Billy Burns, and then they've got a 12 who can do both. He can play your physical game or your offload game. He's been given the license to be flash, which I love. But like you said, if you look at their highlights reel, he features heavily, and I think they've built a bit of a fulcrum in attack around him, which is really nice to see. Away from 10, just from I like seeing a fulcrum of attack being further out than a 10.
Clermont this weekend for them is a free shot, really. They'll have Bath in Belfast in round six. Yeah. They'll most likely get a bonus point win there, and that'll put them into the knockout stages. Really, this Sunday is about getting a home quarter final.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen much of Claremont at home. You might not have had a chance.
Well, I haven't seen much of them in recent months because I stopped watching rugby after the World Cup.
We're going through that mourning period.
But Claremont, I don't know, they've probably lost less than five games in the last five, 6 years at
home. Pretty much, and they have absolutely tanked Harlequins and Bath when they went there.
Yeah, so I would imagine a home win for Claremont, but Mike Farland is on record saying we're absolutely going there with the attitude to win. Mm. But I think in practical terms, they will look to avoid a trouncing, damage limitation, play a respectable performance, get no injuries, and focus on the Bath game and ensure qualification.
You mentioned Cooney there. I want to talk to you about Connacht briefly, but just before we leave off on the Cooney-Murray thing, which has now been a perennial talking point for the last couple of weeks, we know all about Cooney.
Yes.
And it was interesting earlier in the conversation you mentioned that, for instance, Murray was very good against Saracens or kicked the ball very well against Saracens.
He box kicked well against Saracens, I would say, yeah.
Okay, so here's the but.
Yeah.
Where exactly is Murray's game? So the people are saying, well, Murray's not playing as well as he did quite clearly in the 2018 period and a little bit before. So what exactly is he doing well? What's he not doing well?
Well, he's the two things he's surprised me with in recent weeks is his box kicking has actually improved again. His box kicking was probably his biggest weapon 2-3 years ago. Then it became very well marshalled by opposition teams. Then the actual quality of the kick suffered, I think, whether that was technical or confidence or both. He suffered a bit on that and continued to overuse it. That seems to have come back around and that the execution was excellent in his box kicking. I thought his passing was sharp again. Again, I think that's a sign of confidence in a nine. So he, and I don't think he lacks confidence, but ultimately, John Cooney's all-round contribution in terms of his game breaking, his passing being on a par to Murray, his kicking out of hand, his place kicking, I can't see the argument to just pick Conor Murray for the first Six Nations.
But isn't Cooney's place kicking, for instance, a complete irrelevance when it comes to Ireland? Johnny Sexton's not going to say, here, John, you have a go. Irrelevant. Doesn't matter.
It's relevant when Johnny's 34 and he's got the injury profile he does.
Okay, but let's say Johnny's fit and he has a great campaign. Then Cooney's ability to kick is irrelevant. So I just wonder, you know, we're all excited by Cooney and it's a fantastic story. And yet I wonder if we're getting sucked into some kind of bias whereby we're talking down Conor Murray and talking up Cooney. Like, is Murray actually that out of form?
No, he's not. I think his box kicking has come back to form. His passing has been sharp. But, like, the biggest mistake that we made in the last 18 months was of not pick people on form. Just keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
And keep playing the crap way we were playing. And, you know, it didn't work. Like, change is good, albeit hard at times to adapt to. Change is good. Change in any personnel. One of the things that struck me into complete tangent was a couple of years ago watching Jim Gavin drop Mick Fitzsimons for an All-Ireland final for Owen Merchant, who barely played all season. What happened the following year was Mick Fitzsimons was probably the best player in the championship because he wanted to make sure he stayed and won a medal, and Merchant was equally good. And then this year, Merchant goes and gets a wonder goal in the final. The only thing that happened there was that the selection surprised people. The guy who wasn't the incumbent got a boost, and the guy who was the incumbent got a kick up the arse. Like, and it's not rocket science sometimes, it's people management. I feel sorry for John Cooney if he doesn't get picked. What more can a guy do to try and get picked against a guy who is the incumbent who's not been in great form? Just pick the guy who's in form, you know, and give him a shot. You don't have to pick him for the whole Six Nations and see where we go. That'd be my view, but I'm just sitting in a studio.
Wow.
You.
That's your lot in life, unfortunately, now.
Yes, yeah.
Connacht, nine players are returning. I mean, it's just been one of these desperate Christmases for Connacht. They targeted the home game against Munster. That didn't go well. And then injuries and player welfare kicked in. And they, I think, against Ulster, Leinster, was it 89 points conceded? They responded with 10 of their own. So unmitigated disaster, really, for Connacht. And exposed when they get a few injuries, the depth just isn't there. That's the reality for Connacht. They've now a bunch of players coming back, nine players coming back. Jack Cardy's going to come back. Bundy Aki's going to come back. Conor Fitzgerald picked up an injury, so Cardi, you would presume, will play at 10. And Andy Friend was saying that this was the first week they could actually do a 15-on-15 session because they have 32 players finally after having like 23 players for the bulk of the week. I mean, really, this is just what is the approach against Toulouse when qualification is beyond them realistically?
It's Andy Friend's probably, it's probably his first crisis with that group. Connacht have had a whirlwind 5-6 years. You know, when they first, I was in Connacht for the last 2 years from 07 to 09. You know, the average attendance was probably 2,000. The arrival of Pat Lam and all that is well documented now. That was one of the great sporting moments when they went and won the Pro 12, having been under Michael Bradley, finished dead last for 7 seasons in a row. 2 years after Lam took over, they win the tournament. It's a freakish turnaround. So that galvanised Connacht rugby. They, after Lam left, Crowley came in, who by all accounts was a strange choice and not popular with his own bosses and not popular with his players and not apparently popular that much at all and very, very different in terms of his playing approach. I liked the way they played at times under him because it was jouer avec le ballon, as they say, throwing the ball everywhere, and there didn't seem to be much order to that, and that doesn't work either. So Friend came in and seemed to be a bit of a rock of sense, a lot of experience. Everybody took a deep breath and said, all right, we've got a bit of sanity back. We've got a guy who can give us direction and control. And he's done that really well.
Yeah.
And this all of a sudden is a crisis, which he hasn't experienced yet. How many points did they ship, did you say, aggregate?
89-10.
89-10 is a pretty horrific thing to go through for any playing staff member or him.
Is it genuinely a crisis? Or given the injury situation
within
the group, would they all have just understood this is beyond our control? This actually doesn't reflect where we are, so it wouldn't have left any major scar tissue.
I think 89 points in 2 games is going to leave a scar regardless. It does.
Because the Leinster game was a complete embarrassment. Leinster scored after a minute or a minute and a half. Deegan went over and you just knew we're in for the longest of nights here.
There was a moment early on in the Leinster game where one of the, I can't remember which Connacht player, but I remember it was just a ball carried by Joe Tamani, and it was one of the Connacht back rowers who got bounced, fell back on his ass really, and it was just, he was out muscled physically, and I think Andy Friend, without hanging the player out to dry, referenced that moment in the aftermath and said very early on we got bossed in some collisions, and he knew almost from that point that there is that moment as a player or coach. Sometimes you just see something, you just go, "Oh, we're in trouble here."
Especially so in rugby, actually.
Yeah, there seems to be that momentum from early on. If you can't maintain parity in collisions, you're in for a pretty long day. And rugby can be a simple game. I've played in a number of games like that. Amateur club games going down to Limerick, and in the first 4 minutes you knew we're dead meat. Just because of a couple of collisions that happened between, say, key players. So they weren't key players, they weren't regular starters in the Connacht side, and they lost those collisions. In that sense, it's going to hurt. It'll be a scarring in the squad, but I think Friend can, he can use in some way a bit of sidestepping and say, right, we're back to full strength. Mm-hmm. I need an emotional response. I need you at the right pitch mentally to make a big physical performance and make a statement to our home crowd that we, you know, we're Connacht, what we stand for, and we don't take a step back regardless of result. Okay. And I think he can, he doesn't seem like an overly emotional guy. He seems, again, a good tactical and technical coach, but every once in a while it's no harm dipping into that well that says, right, 89 points in the last 2 games, we need that response, and I think people would accept a honourable defeat probably on the back of what's happened.
Okay, perfect stuff. Listen, Andy, thanks so much, appreciate it. That's Andy Dunn.
Cheers, Joe.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team of us. Everyone in.